against all wars. It was pro-peace rather than anti-war.
But certainly there should also be a process for investigating and looking at crimes, violations that may have been committed by coalition forces.
Condoleezza Rice said she didn't find these questions to be interesting. Well, Fran Johns, the mother of a young man who just came back from Iraq, she herself found these questions to be very interesting.
No, we are not satisfied, and we will not be satisfied until justice rolls down like waters and righteousness like a mighty stream.
This is Pacifica's Peace Watch for Thursday, August 28th, 2003. I'm Verna Avery Brown. The Bush administration, in search of ways to expand international forces in Iraq, is exploring for the first time the creation of a multinational military force that would operate under U.N. leadership but still remain subordinate to the U.S. commanders. North Korea startled a six-nation conference on East Asian security today by announcing its intentions to formally declare its possession of nuclear weapons and to carry out a nuclear test. North Korean Deputy Foreign Minister Kim Jong-il also told the gathering in Beijing that his country has the means to deliver nuclear weapons, an apparent reference to the North's highly developed missile program, according to a Bush administration official. The comments cast a pall over today's plenary session, which included representatives of the United States, South Korea, China, Japan, and Russia, in addition to North Korea, raising questions about the success of negotiations scheduled to conclude tomorrow morning. Nevertheless, the diplomats agreed on the need to hold more such talks and probably will. That's according to a South Korean official. James Kelly, the chief U.S. delegate, demanded at the talks that North Korea engage in the verifiable and permanent dismantling of its nuclear weapons program, in return for which the United States would provide security guarantees and economic benefits to the impoverished nation. That's according to a U.S. administration official who asked not to be identified. Prime Minister Tony Blair today denied a BBC report saying that his government had sexed up a dossier about Iraq's weapons of mass destruction with unreliable information, and said he would have had to resign if the charge had been true. Testifying before a judicial inquiry into the apparent suicide of a weapons expert identified as the source of the British Broadcasting Corporation story, Blair said the report had attacked his integrity and led Britons to believe that his government had duped them with its estimation of the threat posed by Iraq. Many Americans continue to question the accuracy of intelligence info used by the Bush administration to justify the war in Iraq. And as the body count of soldiers and civilians continues to rise, U.S. military families are beginning to put pressure on the government to take action. Earlier today, more than 100 families of soldiers serving in Iraq held a press conference in Chicago with Illinois Democratic Congresswoman Jan Schakowsky. They were pressing for an independent commission to investigate whether intelligence information on Iraq's alleged weapons of mass destruction was distorted to justify war. Peace Watch spoke with Congresswoman Schakowsky earlier this afternoon about the press conference and about a recent meeting she had with some constituents.
Well, it was really quite moving. The mom of a soldier that's currently in Germany about to go to Iraq was saying he is proud to serve his country. He serves with honor, and she wants that same kind of honor and dignity from the President of the United States, making sure that the reason that her son is going there is a just one, for a just cause, that he's putting his life on the line. Pointed out that none of their children, that is the Bush administration, the cabinet members, and all of those who are so anxious to go to war, none of their children are there. She pointed out that when Donald Rumsfeld is there, he's surrounded by and protected by armed people in uniform like her son, and he is not protected at all out there, exposed to all kinds of attacks and perhaps to deaths. We've seen more since the so-called end of the war than during the war itself. And so she just wants to know, is he going there for a good reason? Should we have gone into Iraq and started this war? Now, clearly, a number of the people there feel that Iraq was not an imminent threat to the United States and that we should not have gone, but want to have that established through an independent commission.
Well, that's a pretty strong allegation. There are Congress members who are questioning whether or not the President of the United States actually led the nation into war on the basis of faulty intelligence.
One of the rationales for the war was that there are weapons of mass destruction. We find that it's not true. We can't find the weapons of mass destruction. We can't find evidence of the programs that would produce these and the ability of those to be mobilized with deadly force against the United States. There's no sign of nuclear anything going on in Iraq.
What about the role of the U.S. Congress in all of this? The president didn't just go to war on his own. The Congress granted him the authority to do that. And weren't some of these questions pertinent prior to us sending our troops over there? And were Congress members raising these questions at that time?
Well, certainly. And that's the reason that 60% of the Democrats voted against going to war in Iraq and giving the president that authority. But I think it is significant that of the 110 co-sponsors of Congressman Waxman's bill calling for this independent commission, 26 of them voted for the war. And those are individuals who feel deceived. They were, in fact, persuaded by the arguments that the president had made, and they want to know the truth. Mm-hmm. Maybe even some of them think that for other reasons it was still worthwhile for us to go into Iraq, but that wasn't the debate. The debate was about the fact that Iraq poses this lethal, imminent threat to the United States based on the weapons of mass destruction, and that we couldn't wait. The president said he lost patience with the United Nations and their inspections. Well, you know, we've been in there for a very long time now, and we haven't found anything.
And how much bipartisan support do you have in the Congress for this investigation?
So far, none. All of the co-sponsors of the legislation are Democrats, and quite frankly, because of the discipline expected on the part of the Republicans and the heavy hand that people like Tom DeLay, the majority leader in the House, use against their own members, I don't expect that we're going to get much. I'm hopeful that we may get some, people who simply want to know the truth. You know, Condoleezza Rice said not too long ago that these questions that we've been raising, she didn't find these questions to be interesting. Well, Fran Johns, the mother of a young man who just came back from Iraq, said she herself found these questions to be very interesting. Why was her son there? Why are so many of our troops still there? I think most Americans want to know the truth.
Is that a direct quote from Condoleezza Rice? And what questions was she talking about?
The questions about where are the weapons of mass destruction, and what did the president know, and what about this seeking to purchase nuclear material from Niger, et cetera. These questions weren't interesting.
Mm. Is an independent commission modeled after the September 11th commission really adequate at this point, Congresswoman? I mean, would that commission have any authority to level punitive actions against the president if he was found guilty of deliberately misleading the nation into war?
The commission would have authority to call hearings, to obtain documents and testimony, to issue subpoenas. In terms of enforcement power, you're right, but it would be able to recommend that the House and Senate Intelligence Committees vote to declassify any information the commission determines is in the public interest. So I would view this as a beginning. Right now, no questions are being answered. Almost all of the information has been classified. We think that this is a good beginning, that it may end up having to go further, but if we could start here, I would feel that to be a big victory for all those Americans who are so concerned. We are happy that MoveOn.org has generated about 420,000 signatures that have been communicated to Congress of people who want this independent commission to happen. And I brought some of the several thousand letters that have been sent to Illinois and that have been sent to me in my district.
Mm-hmm.
So I think this is starting to build.
Well,
this isn't going to go away.
President Clinton was impeached for lying to a grand jury. Do the deaths of over 279 young American men and women and as many as 10,000 Iraqi civilians in a war based on faulty intelligence rise to the level of high crimes and misdemeanors, in your opinion?
Well, it certainly may. I think, again, that we want to begin to get some empirical answers to the questions that we've been asking. But I'll tell you, among those letters, those comments that were generated about the independent commission, about what's going on in Iraq, many of them said that a president was impeached for lying, and for lying for about something far less significant to the lives of the Americans in terms of life and death, but also, you know, we're in a situation now, it's $1 billion a week, a huge chunk of that, by the way, we saw today in the news, is going to Halliburton, to Vice President Cheney's former company. So is this serious enough to start talking about impeachment? I'm not prepared to do that quite yet, but I'm certainly ready to try and get some answers, and would not rule out the notion that lying about going to the reasons for going to war constitute enough rationale to sometime begin talking about or using that word impeachment.
Mm-hmm. Why not call for an independent prosecutor to bring charges against Bush and the other members of his cabinet?
Well, that may be. I sense that this is building, that it's building fairly rapidly, that the media in general is getting more interested in this. And clearly we want to do this in a timely way so that people who are voting to choose their next president of the United States will know whether or not they want to vote for a president who has led us into war based on exaggerations and, at worst, fabrications.
Illinois Democratic Congresswoman Jan Schakowsky.
Hi. I'm Angelique Chauffard, associate producer of Peace Watch. Although I'm behind the scenes of Peace Watch, I work here because it fulfills my need for alternative perspectives and insights and allows me to make a conscious contribution to peace in humankind. Peace Watch keeps me connected to real, everyday people, and to me, that is important. If you share my views and enjoy this show, then please send in your contribution to sustain its livelihood. You may pledge on our secure website at www.pacifica.org or mail your financial support to 2390 Champlain Street Northwest, Washington, D.C., 20009. We cannot continue without you.
Despite the end of the brutal Ba'athist regime of Saddam Hussein, Iraqis say that life under the American occupation has presented its own new set of problems and complications. Iraqis face the threat of being killed, harmed, or imprisoned by American forces, and families are always ready to hide their precious properties if American soldiers enter their houses searching for weapons. Iraqis driving their cars have learned to take extra care to evade moving American military vehicles, fearing that they may crash their cars. According to some accounts, this sort of constant fear and caution has become a part of daily life in Iraq. Ahmed Al-Rawi, Peace Watch's resident correspondent in Iraq, files this report.
Ra'ad Al-Azawi is the father of 21-year-old Saif, who was killed by American soldiers. On the 7th of August, at 9:30 at night, a convoy of American armored vehicles passed by El Salih district in Baghdad and set up a checkpoint in a dark area where the lights were out due to an electricity failure. Saif, who had recently received a certificate at school for his good grades, went to his aunt's house in his new car. He never suspected that he would encounter an American checkpoint in the dark. His father, Ra'ad, describes what happened.
The conquering invader American soldiers were on a narrow street. It's a crowded neighborhood, so Saif didn't see the checkpoint. A barrage of gunfire erupted in all directions until Saif was killed after he stopped his car near the checkpoint. Then the American mercenary soldiers approached the car and stood above it. They let the two young men with Saif exit the car, though they were injured in the shoulders. Saif was, at that moment, still alive, according to eyewitnesses. He was screaming out in pain, asking for help to be evacuated from the car. The treacherous American soldiers did not allow the people in the neighborhood to approach it. Instead, they detonated the car, burning Saif and his vehicle completely. The people in the district wanted to put out the fire with fire extinguishers and water, but the American conquering forces pointed their weapons at anyone trying to extinguish it. No sign of the car or Saif remained distinguished such that we can identify them. The American forces killed him with his happiness since he had recently achieved success in his studies. Saif is now beside his God and will remain forever in heaven as a martyr. They were reluctant to even ask about us because they imagined Iraqis having no feelings or honor or history or civilization.
Saad Adil, a council member in the Al-Azamiyya city region of Baghdad, witnessed from his house what happened to Saif. And he says even his own son was injured during the incident.
A fast Opel car drove down the street and the poor youth, Saif Raid al-Azawi, was driving it. Two young people were with him, one of whom stuck his head out the moonroof of the car. They were happy and they were listening to music. The problem was that the area was dark. It was not obvious that there was an American checkpoint up ahead, since there were no warning signs and no roadblocks to warn the passers-by that there was an army or that a search was being conducted here. Since Saif came fast, my son and I tried to warn him, but he didn't hear us. The incident happened in a matter of seconds. The American soldier merely raised his hand without shooting any warning shots, as we used to have in the past. Saif stopped after seeing American soldiers in front of him, but then shooting began to envelop him. The only thing he did wrong was that he was driving fast.
Saad Adil was shot at, like all others standing in the street, who were watching what was going on. He was not injured, but his son Muhammad was shot in his leg.
Bullets were pouring like rain on us. My brother came and he tried to carry my son. My brother-in-law told me he would talk to them, so he came from this door shouting, but with no use. I saw the American soldier get into a firing position and he directed his laser-guided gun on my brother-in-law to kill him.
Muhammad Adil was taken to the hospital after the American troops left the scene. He describes the incident from his vantage point.
We shouted at everyone passing, telling them to enter the nearest alley to evade the American soldiers, since we saw them pointing their weapons at people who were unaware of their presence. I was standing in front of the house, and there was our car between me and the American soldiers. There was a car heading toward the Americans, so I thought that they will shoot him. I called out to the driver, but he did not hear me. At the same moment, the soldiers began shooting, and I heard the screams of the passengers in the car. One said that his hand was injured, the other said his shoulder, and one said his head. In the meantime, I hid behind the car. The soldiers began to shoot randomly. I felt the car is receiving many shots as some bullets are coming from below the car. My father and uncle entered the house, and I tried to enter after them, but a series of shots came. One bullet came above my head, the other near my leg, and one entered my leg and penetrated the muscle.
Muhammad Adil witnessed what happened later to a bystander, as well as to Saif's friends in the car, who were badly injured.
The Americans approached the car and made Saif's friends, Ali and Abbas, who were injured, come out of the car and wear plastic bags on their heads. They were beaten and taken away while they were injured. Now they are detained in the airport detention camp, and journalists are prohibited from coming close to them. Another person was injured. He was a 13-year-old kid who was my relative. He was shot in his leg, but the bullet hit the vein, so he started bleeding.
Muhammad's father, Saeed, says that after Saif was killed, another car passed the scene. It was a white Volkswagen containing a whole family who was peacefully driving through the area.
A Brazilian Passat car passed by with this poor family. The driver was driving slowly and his lights were dim. He did not have on his full headlights, so the soldiers might have thought he was suspicious. I said to myself, this man will die, and I had not even finished the sentence when the shooting started. He stopped in front of my house. He was not even in the midst of them. The father and his son and two daughters were all killed. His wife ran out of the car hysterical. The man was left alone bleeding until he died. 10 minutes later, the soldiers withdrew.
$500 are supposed to be given for an injury and $2,500 for a fatality by the coalition authorities. They say that till now they've received more than 2,500 claims, stressing the fact that no one will receive compensation unless they prove clear-cut negligence or wrongdoing by soldiers. But the money given to the people comes from Iraqi funds abroad frozen during the first Gulf War. None of the people involved in either of these incidents mentioned has received such compensation. Other Iraqis who have had their property confiscated say they have also failed to receive any compensation. For example, Adnan Karim Faraj, the owner of Al Hajar Money Exchange Company, was driving his car when he was stopped at an American checkpoint. He was carrying with him all his fortune, $17,000. He says he was stopped in the street by an American soldier and $10,000 were taken from him.
The American captain told me that he did all he had to do by returning $7,000 of the $17,000 an American soldier had taken from me. The captain told me that a soldier could not be pressured to return it, since each one has a lawyer. If he is judged, then the trial could be held in either Iraq or in the U.S. So I asked him, if this soldier and thief who stole my money from me has a lawyer, who will defend me? If I was trying to profit from the situation, I would claim that the amount I am owed is not $17,000, but $27,000. He knows that my case is true, and there is evidence and eyewitnesses. But now, I am tired from my continuous visits to the Americans, trying to get my money back, and the $10,000 is still in their possession.
Sabah Mohammed is a teacher at Al Ja'far School in Baghdad. He says his car was severely damaged by an American armored vehicle, but no one has given him compensation for the damages that occurred to his property.
When we went to the Amirai district in Baghdad, a convoy of American vehicles approached us on the left side, so I went to the right. The last armored vehicle in the convoy came close to my car and crashed it, though the road was very wide. They did not even stop to see the damage. I came out from my car and saw the bad damage, since the left side was dented badly. I fixed my car at my own expense, which was very difficult for me, since we're going through a critical period.
Amnesty International, which is concerned about such cases, held talks with the coalition forces about what it perceives as grave violations of human rights by the occupying powers. One problem it has investigated is the way American forces search Iraqi houses for weapons, but end up taking valuable personal items of Iraqis. Dr. Saeed Boumamdouha is Amnesty International's spokesperson in Iraq.
First of all, the search methods and also items taken and not returned, especially money, cash. We have interviewed quite a few people who said the same thing. We have visited places, houses, days after they had been searched or searched by the U.S. soldiers. We found that everything was turned upside down. Certain items were taken, like money, in some cases a lot of money, and sometimes families actually are reliant on that money. It's like in some cases maybe it's like a life saving, and the problem is like these people don't know where to go to complain. They go from one place to another, and that's why there should be a mechanism known to everybody, like a place where people who feel that they have been actually their rights have been violated, they should go and complain there, and there should be like people there from the authorities to listen to their complaints and take these complaints seriously.
Iraqis now are searching for compensation for cases of injuries, confiscation or damage to private property, but when it comes to cases of killings, they prefer that Islamic jurisdiction or Iraqi courts take over that role. That's what Ra'ad al-Azawi thinks should happen in the case of the killing of his son, Saif al-Azawi.
We are totally convinced that what is between us and the occupying American forces is the gracious Quran, with the constitution of Islam and the sayings of the Prophet. We will let our religious leaders decide what's to be done in such cases. Since the killer is an invader who is neither an Arab nor a Muslim, an international tribunal could be made to judge those who killed and burned Saif.
But the problem for Iraqis now is that Paul Bremer, the U.S. civil administrator in Iraq, has issued a decree declaring that no Iraqi court, including the Central Criminal Court, shall have jurisdiction over any personnel of a coalition member state in any matter, whether civil or criminal. This order created outrage among many Iraqis who feel that their rights will be lost if they are harmed by American forces. Hani Majelli, Human Rights Watch spokesperson in Iraq, stresses the importance of establishing courts for trying any misdeeds.
We know that a Central Criminal Court has been established by Bremer to try Iraqis who have been involved in looting or other crimes post-war, in a sense. And there's now a discussion about what type of court will look at past crimes. But certainly there should also be a process for investigating and looking at crimes in violations that may have been committed by coalition forces. There are levels of crimes that can be committed during war or during occupation, and certainly the Geneva Conventions apply here, so that if war crimes are committed by the coalition forces, and when I talk about war crimes, for example, the arbitrary killing, indiscriminate killing of civilians, the use of civilians as human shields, or even the enforced use of civilians for military operations. Now, there may be other levels of crimes, destruction of property or confiscation of property, where lawyers would need to look at how the crime was committed, whether it was in as part of the conduct of a military operation, where you might say it was accidental, or whether it was deliberate wanton destruction with no military benefit. And if so, then they may want to investigate and may want to hold accountable and punish those responsible. And so those individuals, if they happen to travel to other countries, could then be arrested and charged and put on trial for those crimes. But obviously the first step, and that's what we always say, is for the United States in this case, and the United Kingdom, and any other countries that have forces here, to use their domestic legislation to investigate and to hold accountable their soldiers if they have committed war crimes.
Dr. Saeed Boumamdouha of Amnesty International agrees with the Human Rights Watch that the American authorities should punish their soldiers who misbehave, a scene many Iraqis have been waiting patiently to see.
I think that's the problem with these kind of situations where you have an occupying force. So I think according to the Geneva Convention, they themselves are supposed to be like trying their own nationals for any criminal activity or any human rights violation. The problem is, for us, we want, you know, those investigations or, you know, to be actually made public. The outcome of such investigations must be made public. Those found responsible must be brought to justice.
Iraqis who have been harmed by the American occupying forces would like to have a clear channel by which they can sue and bring to justice any members of the coalition forces who they feel violate their rights. Until that happens, however, many Iraqis say that they are still looking for the democracy and liberation America had promised them. For Pacifica's Peace Watch, this is Ahmed Rawi in Baghdad.
You're listening to Pacifica's Peace Watch. I'm Verna Avery Brown. We'll be back in a moment.